Praise God. I'm glad that I came to church this morning just for that worship set. There is something different when we come and we gather together and we worship God together and we lift our voices as one that I absolutely love. It makes it all worth coming for me. Also, I love comfort. I love things that are nice and easy. I do love having a car with heated seats, especially today. I love a house that is warm. I heat with wood, and you know what? Even when it's this cold, you just throw a few more oak logs. It doesn't cost me any more, and my house was 76 degrees yesterday. I love good food. I love a great meal. I love plush blankets. I love things that are nice. I also love things that are convenient and that are easy, that when I get a hankering for a hamburger, I can just pull through the drive-thru at McDonald's and 3 minutes later, I'm sipping on an ice-cold Mountain Dew and eating a quarter pounder. We live in a culture that has conditioned us to like things that are nice and easy and comfortable and convenient. Everything that goes according to plan. That's how we have been formed by our culture. In fact, some Christians wrongly assume that the easier that life goes, the closer you must be with God. They think that by being a good Christian, that means that God is going to line up everything for you, that you will be healthy, you will be wealthy, you will have no persecutions, no struggles, no relational drama. Because you are following God, everything is going to go according to the plan. And maybe that's not your belief. Maybe you're sitting here and you're like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not like those people who follow those prosperity preachers. I know that life isn't easy. But let me ask you, when life doesn't go your way, and things get hard, and people get irritating, and you are completely inconvenienced by other people's choices, how do you respond? Do you accept it as part of God's work in your life? Or do you sit there and go, God, why are you punishing me? Why do I have to sit in traffic right now on the interstate because a truck had gotten bad weather? I'm late and I need to get going. Like, how we respond in those challenging situations says a lot about our expectation of a life following Jesus. Do we expect everything to go smooth? And when it doesn't, do we right away get upset with God? When we find out that somebody in our family had something really bad happen to them, do we get angry at God? Or do we recognize that this is all part of life and that God works in the good times and in the mess? Perhaps you're a bit like me. Disclaimer on this message before we get too far. I normally like to say that I've been living the message for a week before I've given it. I've had it in my mind, so I've had time to practice it so that I can say, look, if we get to the end of this and you learn to give up convenience and comfort, you'll have this greater joy on the other end. I still struggle with this a whole lot. When things are difficult or don't go according to plan, I get a little frustrated. I can be a little judgmental. I have been told that perhaps I am a bit particular, was the word that was used. And I can't disagree. If you've worked with me, you're like, yeah, that is accurate. I want things just so. And I'm sure that you can relate, though, to one level or another. You want things to go according to plan. You don't want your life to always be difficult at every turn. Maybe this Christmas you have experienced some twists and turns that were a bit frustrating for you. Perhaps you had an unexpected early guest that you were having people over, and you still had a lot to do at your house, and somebody decided, you know what, they didn't have anything going on, they're just going to show up 45 minutes early. If you're in that situation, it can be very frustrating. Young adults, 6 o'clock, not 5:15. We will still be cooking at 5:15. Don't come early. Perhaps you've set up a system at work for all your coworkers to follow. And if everybody would just follow the system you set up, everything would go great. But there's always that one coworker who's not filling out the TPS report. And then everything is a mess. And you're like, just do the job I asked you to do. And you get so angry. Maybe you've got kids who won't stick to the schedule and you said, hey, we're leaving in 20 minutes, get your shoes on, get your bed made, do all these things. And no matter how much time you give them to get ready, at the last minute, you are fighting with them, you are pulling teeth, you are like throwing their shoes on and putting their jacket on backwards, and everybody's stressed out as you get into the car to go to some fun event, and you're ruining for everybody that event that's meant to be a really good time. Maybe you've had holiday plans fall apart because someone got sick or the weather kept somebody from being able to make the trip. I can honestly say, however, that whatever your inconveniences that you have faced this year or in past years, they pale in comparison to what Mary went through before the birth of her firstborn. Imagine for a moment what Mary's life would have been like from the moment we read that the angel visits her and tells her, Mary, you are going to give birth to the Lord Most High. And yes, like we talked about last week, she has a very uncomfortable conversation with Joseph where she says, hey, Joe, I know this is going to be hard to believe, but I'm pregnant and I promise I wasn't unfaithful. And he doesn't believe her until an angel shows up to him and says, Joseph, it's okay. The miraculous has occurred. God is coming into this earth. Okay, so they've grappled with that truth. But now they're doing what every one of you who has been a mother naturally does. You start nesting, right? You want to prepare your house. You want to have your home ready. You say, hey, Joseph, I know you got these amazing carpentry skills that your dad taught you. I'm going to need a crib. And your friends and your family are sewing you blankets, and you're getting everything ready in your home so that when you give birth and you have this child in your home, you're ready. That's what Mary would have been focused on doing. She was going out to the Target of Nazareth. I don't know what it was called. Big baby section. She was picking out what she needed. She was making sure that she had whatever it is that they would have used all set up in her home, because they would have been planning. You know, yes, it was a shock that she was pregnant, but let's plan for this parenthood. And it should have all gone according to plan until the messenger came through town and completely shattered and disrupted her plans. We read about this story in Luke chapter 2. If you want to open your Bibles, we're going to be in Luke chapter 2 today, reading the very classic Christmas story that is shared by Linus. Chapter 2, verse 1. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria, and everyone went to their own town to register. So for how many details are missing in this story, the birth story of Jesus? We don't know about the conversation between Mary and Joseph. We don't know what she did for the months leading up to her finally giving birth. We really don't know much of what happened at all on the night of her giving birth, other than there was no room for her at the inn. But Luke makes a very clear effort to let us know exactly where this child was born and why this child was born in Bethlehem. You see, this detail is critical because, just like we saw last week, it yet again fulfills another prophecy from hundreds of years earlier about where the Messiah had to be born. In Micah chapter 5, verse 2, that prophet wrote, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. And at the moment that this was prophesied and written down, it might have been a little bit unclear as to exactly what this means. Like, we read that and it doesn't say the Messiah will be born in Bethlehem. But we see from Bethlehem the one who will rule over Israel, whose origins are from of old, this eternal one, Jesus Christ. We look at this and we go, clearly this is about Jesus. But we understand even at that time, what we'll find out next week, the wise men, when they showed up looking for the Christ child, they knew that this child would have been born in Bethlehem because of this prophecy. And so in the opening of the story of the birth of Jesus, it shows us one very important lesson, and that is this, that God controls even the heart of kings. You see, Jesus had to be born in Bethlehem, but Joseph and Mary had no reason to go there. And for some reason, God didn't choose a family who already resided in Bethlehem. They lived in Nazareth. He needed to get them 70 miles for no real reason, except he decided to do something different. He used a king, Caesar Augustus. Some people would call this a coincidence. It's just a coincidence that right before she was to give birth, they were essentially ordered and commanded to pack up, hop on a donkey, and make the arduous trek back home to grandpa, great-great-grandpa's hometown for Joseph. We could look at this and say, why did God not use an angel? They used an angel to tell Mary she was giving birth. God sent an angel to tell Joseph not to divorce Mary. He could have given another angel and said, hey, you guys need to pack up and head over. But that's not what God did. For some reason, God showed us that he is sovereignly in control, not of just the singular moments in people's lives, but he can control an entire nation. He made everybody pack up and take off traveling, simply to move this one husband and wife so that the Christ child could be born where he had to be born to fulfill the prophecy from hundreds of years earlier. And in Proverbs, God is described, his power is described this way, and it lines up with what we just saw in Proverbs 21, verse 1. In the Lord's hand, the king's heart is a stream of water that he channels toward all who please him. Essentially, God can control the hearts of all kings. We see in Exodus, he controlled Pharaoh's heart. And through that whole story of let my people go, God kept hardening Pharaoh's heart. God is able to do that. He can move world events, great and small, any way that he would like to. So yes, he can send an angel to an individual, but he can also move the heart of Caesar Augustus, which landed Mary and Joseph in this small town the night that Jesus was to be born. And this is something that we need to remember for ourselves when we're watching the news at night. We need to learn to let go of some of the anxiety that you might feel and trust that even through all the bad news, God is still in control. It doesn't mean that we should just lay down if we have, say, a tyrant who's completely ruling roughshod over us. Like the Germans in Hitler's day, we're not, as Christians, they should not have ethically just laid down and been like, well, maybe this is God's plan. As Christians, we should seek the peace and the welfare of our communities. But sometimes God's kingdom come, God's will be done, and it looks differently than how we might imagine it to. In Matthew chapter 24, Jesus tells us what's going to happen before the end comes, before his return to this earth to bring his people home. He says there's going to be wars and rumors of wars. There's going to be famine. Christians are going to be persecuted and maybe even put to death. It doesn't sound great when we hear these things, but we have to recognize even when the news cycle looks really bad, it doesn't mean that God is out of control. It means sometimes he's allowing really bad things to happen because he's allowing them to move to where he has an ultimate end in plan. An ultimate end planned. This census God had a plan for salvation history. Jesus had to be in Bethlehem. For Jesus' second return, there are other events that are going to have to happen, and they're not going to look pretty. And in those moments, we're going to have to say, God, I don't understand. Your kingdom come, your will be done. And it doesn't mean that we give up praying for peace, but it also means that we live in the tension that we know at some point there will be bad events that happen in this world, and God wants peace. And we just have to understand God's in control at all times. Do we follow? Unless you've been living under a rock, we recognize right now there's a lot going on in Israel. There's been a lot of war, a lot of fighting, a lot of death, and famine. It's possible we look at that and say God's allowing things to move towards an end result. And this might not be the time of God's return being imminent. And so we have to live in the tension. We pray for peace and an end to the suffering and the war there, but we also understand that God can control the hearts of kings to move things towards the end that he has already prophesied is going to happen. And so as Christians, we just have to understand the both and of that situation. Okay, so as we continue then, we have to see through this story. I've got 2 points really in this message. The first point, God was able to move Caesar's heart to fulfill prophecy that had to occur. But ultimately, that decree for all of the Roman Empire had a very real impact on individuals. For Mary and Joseph, they had to pack up while she's 9 months pregnant and head out towards Bethlehem. I would have loved to have brought my donkey in here to show you what that would be like. But it doesn't even say that they had a donkey. We just kind of picture that into the story. But we know that they traveled, and we know that it was 65 to 70 miles, 3 to 4 days under normal circumstances. This is how Luke describes it. He doesn't give us a lot of the details in verse 4. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. When they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in clothes and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. Let's take a moment and put ourselves in Mary's shoes. How you would be feeling. You have nested, you have prepared your home, you have a cradle, you have the blankets, and all of a sudden you are told you're on a trip. You've got to walk by foot or by donkey. You've got to go multiple days travel. Worse yet, your mom is not going with you, because your dad is probably not from the city of David, Bethlehem. So your mom is going with your dad to his hometown, and now you're going to give birth with Joseph's mom there. How many of you would be like, yes, I would much rather have my mother-in-law with me than my own mother when I give birth the first time? Any hands? No? You want your mom there. She doesn't have her mom. She's with Joseph's whole extended family when she gets there. And there's not even a room for them that's clean or put together, that they're like, I know it's not the house that and the room that you prepared, but at least it's something nice. No, we find out all these people came into Bethlehem. There wasn't enough space for everybody. So they were given possibly the stable underneath the living quarters, or maybe even a cave. We don't know for certain. What we do know is the animals were lowing, right? They were there. They were not among normal situation where a woman would ever want to be giving birth. And then we know, by surprise, in the middle of it all, she had smelly visitors arrive, the shepherds who wanted to see this child. Now, I know some of you, even when your house is clean, if an unexpected guest shows up to your house, your first thought is, why are they here? I didn't invite them to come over. I'm busy right now. Am I wrong? Right. Some of you are like, I only want to see other people if it's planned and it's on my calendar. She's just given birth. She's not looking her best. She's not feeling her best. And all of a sudden, total strangers show up. Some of you would be mortified. You would be like, turn them away. I don't want to see them. Mary graciously has these visitors come and tell her about the angelic vision that they had and that they have now seen the Messiah. And so she has everything confirmed in her heart. And it really is a beautiful thing. But her life was not easy. This was definitely a very inconvenient and uncomfortable situation for her from the beginning to end. And then the part of the story nobody ever talks about. She was in Bethlehem. Her house was in Nazareth. She had to go back with a baby in her arms. Like, I just drove to my parents in Wisconsin on Thursday. The drive there is always fine. It's the drive back that feels like it is taking absolutely forever. Now she's got to do that with a child also. I don't know if they just wrapped the child on Joseph. Like, was Joseph a modern man? You can buy those things. You just tie the child up to the front and dad can walk around with them now, baby facing out. You guys know what I'm talking about. We don't know culturally exactly what they had, but I can imagine that journey was no easier than the journey to Bethlehem. This entire process was not at all what she had planned. It was not at all convenient or comfortable or nice. It would have been a whole lot of mess for her. The Catholics like to call Mary a saint because of her virgin birth. But I think the fact that she put up with all of this makes her a saint in my own eyes, right? Like, if any of you went through this, you'd be like, wow, that was a lot. That's tongue-in-cheek. I wouldn't refer to her as a saint. Okay, so what's surprising, though, in this all is we do not see Mary complaining. In fact, we see after the shepherds leave, we read these words in Luke 2:19. It says, but Mary treasured up all these things, and she pondered them in her heart. Honestly, if it were you, and this whole situation happened, how much complaining and grumbling would you have done? We're not good with inconvenience. We're not good with things that take us out of our routine, that make our lives hard and uncomfortable. Our natural response to unplanned chaos is we complain and we blame people for doing this to us and we stress about things. We're filled with anxiety. We see these interruptions, or we see the inconvenience as being an interruption to God's plan. Like, we imagine God's plan, everything has to be perfect. We want this picture-perfect Christmas or even a picture-perfect life for ourselves. And we forget that God often does his best work in the mess, not apart from it. But Mary's response is totally different than our American inclination. She treasured up these things and she pondered them in her heart. She didn't have the full picture yet at all of what was to come. But she just sat and she trusted God's character. She chose to see God's hand in the chaos rather than just only see the inconveniences. She was able to ponder the meaning rather than the mess. She was able to look beyond. Maybe she saw the why and understood, we're in Bethlehem. This is significant. So that is a very real look at the Christmas story through Mary's perspective. And perhaps she might not have been as accustomed to comfort and to convenience as we are, and so she wouldn't have seen it as disruptive as we might. But understand, when we read this story and we make it a modern telling, you recognize ladies who have given birth, this would not at all have been how you'd choose to give birth to your firstborn child. Like, this is not it. But Mary was able to see through it and recognize she was part of the bigger picture, I think. What it shows when we see how uncomfortable and inconvenienced we might have felt, the grumbling we might have done, we expose the gap in our lives between what it looks like to fully trust God with your life and what it looks like to be so centered on yourself and what you have as expectations for how others treat you and how life should treat you. But we have to understand, God isn't in the business of making our lives easy. He's trying to accomplish a much bigger story, and that is salvation of the world. Mary's part of the story is that she had to get herself to Bethlehem, And God made it happen because of Caesar Augustus. And she got there and she gave birth in Bethlehem and she fulfilled the prophecy. But now you're a part of God's story as well. As we learned in that last series, we're all part of this reconciliation of all the world to God and helping other people find a relationship with Jesus Christ. And maybe, just maybe, sometimes God is using inconveniences in your life to slow you down and to put you in a situation where you can have a conversation with somebody who needs to hear the truth of the gospel or somebody who needs a listening ear to sit and just hear about their hardships and offer them hope or an encouraging word. This Christmas, I encourage you to pay attention to any chaos that you might be complaining about and recognize that it might actually be God setting you up for something beautiful. Maybe your complaints of inconvenience can be turned into a recognition of an opportunity. Think about that. What if the fender bender that you have because of the bad weather in this storm that now costs you $1,000 of a deductible and time sitting in a repair shop is actually, or is not God's failure to protect you, but it's actually God trying to get you into a situation where you run into the mechanic or somebody else sitting in the waiting room and you can have a conversation with them. Or maybe when you've got to run into the grocery store really quick because you forgot one item and you're like, I'll be in and out in 3 minutes, but you run into that old classmate that you haven't seen in years and they want to talk because life has been really, really hard. And it's so easy to be like, okay, it was great seeing you. Bye, I got to go. And we're so focused on ourselves, we want to move on. But God's saying, slow down. See what I'm trying to do through this inconvenience and through this discomfort. I'm trying to put you in a situation that I need you to be in because you can be light here. God needed Mary in Bethlehem, and maybe he needs you at Hy-Vee on Tuesday next week at 4:37 p.m. to run into that person who needs to talk to you. Now, I'm not saying that every single disruption is a God-ordained special moment for you, but if you're never aware of it, if you're never looking for it, you will never see it. And you will never respond appropriately. The nativity scenes that we set up under our trees are so clean, and they're so perfect, and they're so organized, especially some of you I know, you get it just right to the perfect half inch. It's got to be just so. But that is not how Christmas went. It was messy. It was chaotic. It was incredibly inconvenient. It is not at all how Mary would have planned it. She did not get the comfortable, convenient birth she had prepared for. She got a stable and a manger and the stinky shepherds who showed up when she didn't want to talk to anybody. And then a long journey home with a newborn. But she treasured it. She pondered it. She saw what God was doing through it. And here's what I want you to hear today. God still works that same way. His plans for you aren't always going to be comfortable or easy. Sometimes you are going to be asked to do things that you're like, I'd really rather not. That's what Mary probably was thinking. You're going to need to go to Bethlehem. I'd really rather not. But she did it. And there are things that God needs you to do, even though they're not easy. They're not what you had planned. In fact, if you're waiting for your life to get easy and organized before you can be used by God, you think right now I'm too messy, I can't do what I need to do, I'll just get myself cleaned up and then God can use me, you're waiting for the wrong thing and you're going to wait for a really, really long time. You see, your picture-perfect expectations might be keeping you from seeing how God is actually at work today in the mess, in the inconvenience, in the disruptions, in the times where you're like, why are you taking so long to do this? I've had multiple interruptions in my life this week. And I'll be honest, in every single one of those, my human nature were like, why are you doing this to me? This is making my life harder. And if I told you what they actually were, you would think I was the most shallow person in the entire world. Because at times, I am. And so are you. We allow these really small things to upset us. But maybe God is working in a different way. Maybe it's a time for me to slow up and say, I'm so glad that I ran into you. How are you doing? How is Christmas treating you this year? You never know what doors God might be opening for you. So this Christmas, when the inconvenience hits, when your plans fall apart, and when people disrupt your schedule, pause. Take a moment and ask God how he might be at work. Because the God who moved Caesar's heart to allow Mary to get to Bethlehem is the same God who can orchestrate those inconveniences, those coincidences in your life to make a difference in somebody else's life. So stop trying to create those perfect moments and start looking for God in the messy ones, because that's where he's always been. He's always been in the middle of our unplanned chaos, doing something more beautiful than we could ever plan all on our own. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?